They can be a great people, Kalo. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 61 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that BM no bizarro podcast BM your no friend. Me am Richard Gray.
Me am David McVeigh.
And joining us in the studio once again is our BM good friend and our resident Grant Morrison scholar, David Longo.
Me am bizarro.
David, of course, is from damngoodcup.com, and house rules apply. Mr. Longo is Dave for the duration of this podcast, and Mr. McVeigh is David. Something I only have to remember one week at a time. Of course, in this issue, Archie gets eaten by zombies. Matt Fraction stops time with his sex, and DC release DC 2 and their multiverse, because DC 1 is working so well
that we need another one.
And this is Behind the Panels.
That's right, everyone.
Sorry, I was just getting my groove on over here.
We're recording live from Beverly Hills.
Circa 1992. Yeah. That song, of course, was The Spin Doctors. Remember them? With Jimmy Olsen's Blues off the album Pocket Fuller. That, of course, which I've completely forgot to mention in the intro, that when this week we're doing our kick-ass pick of the week is All-Star Superman by Grant Morrison.
Okay.
Completely forgot to do it. So this week, All-Star Superman, Grant Morrison and Frank Quietly. No, you haven't tuned into the wrong podcast.
And have we reminded everybody that this is Superman month? So
this is Superman month, because we've got a movie that's out this week in the States and in about 7 years here in Australia.
They have to ship it over on a boat. Come on.
It's a rowboat. They put the cans in the boat and they pedal really
hard.
We
are so spoiled. We've had every Marvel film early. We have all these films coming out weeks
before. Our comic punishment,
this
right?
This is our kryptonite. Yeah, that's
and we have Superman Unchained next week.
Yes, Superman Unchained, which is great.
The Battle of the Snyders, if I will.
Yes, Superman Unchained is the new Scott Snyder comic book that's coming out next week. Not to be confused with Zack Snyder, or as I affectionately call him, Snack.
Snacky.
And we just will never get him as a guest now.
No. I just think it's a name he should adopt, because we were talking about this before the show. Any director worth their salt uses a one-word name.
And salt goes very well with a snack.
Absolutely. Salty Snack. That's what we'll call him.
And as we said outside beforehand, we think that all his films should say a snack joint. Yes.
Well, Australia tends to get films of the late because we are backwards in time. We've always known this. So let's go a little further back. How's that for a segue?
That's good.
Yeah. A little further back in time with our vintage clip of the week. So I'm going to fire up the Wayback Machine. Let's see if it holds three people. No, it's not anymore.
Longo, out.
All right, let's try it again. I've adjusted, I've recalculated, I've used, because I'm the son of a scientist, much like Superman. I've readjusted the three people. Let's go back in time.
Superman, Man, am I glad to see you.
What are you doing on this deserted road?
Some guys from school drove out here and we're going to start fooling around with drugs. When I told them all drugs do is mess up your head and get you in a lot of trouble, they kicked me out of the van and drove off.
You're right not to get involved in the drug scene. Nobody with any sense wants any part of it.
How do I get home?
That's no problem at all.
That's no problem at all. Smoke dope and fly.
That's how you get home, you get high.
Is kryptonite kind of a drug for him?
I guess it is, and that's why you don't want to get messed up with it.
Yeah, that's why, in a bit of a spoiler, people, but in All-Star Superman, he goes, ooh, kind of tickles. Yeah.
That's the black kryptonite. Yeah. That's the hard shit.
Oh, so and an S-bomb has dropped already.
You got your green K, you got your red K, you got your black K, and you got your special K.
And there's also the gold K, man. Don't forget gold K.
How much of Krypton wound up on Earth? They must have. When it blew up, it must have just been targeted directly.
It was like a direct flight path. Yeah. There is a theory I once read that said that it was actually, a lot of it was caught in the wake of his ship. So if he hadn't come here, it wouldn't be here, you know?
Oh, so he brought the means of his own destruction.
Yeah, he brought it with him.
That's
one theory, and I think it, quite frankly, is bull crap. But that's beside the point.
What's the one from Smallville? It's like the meteorites also have kryptonite in them, don't they?
Well, that's all the what do they call it? Meteor rocks.
Meteor rocks.
Because in Smallville, of course, they simplify everything. He's the red, blue blur and the meteor rocks.
Yeah.
Big thing come from sky.
Thank you, Bizarro. Okay.
I only ever watched the pilot, so...
Oh, you know, really? Yeah. I sat through all 10 seasons. It was a guilty pleasure. I knew it was bad for me. I knew it was melting my brain, but I could not stop watching. Yeah.
All I remember from the pilot is they mentioned Oliver Queen is alive.
I think you were watching the wrong show.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the trailer for Batman Arkham Origins?
We did. We spoke about there was an older trailer we spoke about a few weeks ago on the show, and I haven't put it in this week's show because we've got a hell of a lot of Us Superman, as I'm calling it, which is my shorthand for All-Star Superman. Yeah. I'm going to call it Us Superman, which is spelt A-double-S Uperman.
Uperman. I know Mr. Uperman. He lives down the road.
Right. Enough of this fun.
How dare we have fun on this show?
I'm going to put an end to this fun right now and hit this button.
Where? Looks like we got ourselves a reader. Read between the lines, bitch.
And it's funny I should mention that, reading between the lines, bitch. Because... we did this week. We read between the lines. We read behind the panels. We read a line. We read a comic that's got a lot of language in it. Kick-Ass 3.
Yes.
Kick-Ass.
It's back. We've been dying to read it.
Yeah. Because we love Kick-Ass 2 so much.
I would read a Hit Girl 2 before I'm going to read Kick-Ass 3.
Well, Kick-Ass 3 starts... it's a lot darker than it was. I mean, some of the core humor has been brought back into it. There's a great scene where they're standing... over the grave of his parents, and he's like posing out different shots, and does it look better with the black cape and the black, you know, the long black coat? What if I kneel and look down? He's like, dude, that looks great, you know.
And then his friend's like, can I do it after you?
Yeah, yeah,
can I borrow the coat? Just give me a couple minutes.
Yeah. And so it seems to be more like the whole appeal of the superhero thing is like there's no villains to fight, so they're all kind of like just they've got nothing to live for really, and it's like, and meanwhile Hit Girl's in jail. And they go to break her out, but then most of them pussy out.
Yeah, they don't even try. They get right outside the prison gates and they're like, should we go in?
Nah.
And then they're like, we'll come back.
And it just comes to Hit Girl in the prison cell. It's going, pussies. And it's like, it's a really tragic moment. She's just sitting there alone in a prison cell. So there's this really dark edge to it. And I don't mind it too much because so far it's a good start. But then, as we've seen a lot of Millar's stuff, good start. We'll see how we feel in 5 issues. Mm.
Depends on how tight he keeps it. If Millar keeps it really tight, like Superior, he can be really, really sharp. It's when he drags things on a little bit. It's like, first Kick-Ass is really sharp. He's now dragged it on another series, another Hit Girl. Another, it's like, leave it alone now.
Because this will be 18 issues. No, well, it'll be...
18.
18. No, hang on. No, this one's on 18, but I mean, accumulatively, no, this will be 24 issues by the time this is done. We'll have 24 issues of Kick-Ass.
For him, that's too long.
Or is that more? No, they're 8 issues a series.
They're 8 issues. Oh, Hit Girl's only 3 or 4.
Only 5, wasn't it? Yeah, so I was thinking 6 apiece.
To simplify it, how many is this This run of
Kick-Ass
3.
I don't think this one's 8. I think it's... I think this one's 6 issues, I have a feeling.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that kind of worries me a bit, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's not much that actually happens in this first issue, and you're just saying now, like, that if he takes his time...
Yeah, and that's what worries me. Is I always find with Mark Millar that the longer his series go on, the more watered down he becomes. Mm. I think he loses focus. And when he's focused, he's dangerous. When you look at, as I said, Superior, or you look at the first Kick-Ass, or you look at even a Wanted... you know, his original, not the movie that had bared no resemblance to it. But when you look at these series, and they're really tight, they're really sharp, and they have a definite endpoint. Kick-Ass had a definite endpoint, and now he's gone, well, that really wasn't the ending. Here's a little bit more, and then that wasn't the ending. Here's a little bit more, and here's a little... And you go, enough. You know, and it's like, if you look at the Ultimates is short and sharp. Then the second Ultimates wasn't quite as strong, and then other people took it over and they've kind of milked it for all it's worth. But when he did that first Ultimate, that was a really sharp retake on the Avengers, you know? And I just worry with Mark Millar that he really needs to keep in short form. Keep it short and focused, and he's really dangerous.
And I always get the impression with a lot of Mark Millar's works is that he has a really good idea. And then that's pretty much it. He just, like, dives.
Well, and that's
right
why he's
got to
keep it short, because the idea runs out fast.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know? Jupiter's Legacy, for example. Did you guys get a chance to read it?
I read the first issue, yeah.
Loved the first issue. But now I'm worried that, you know,
is
it going to sustain
I've read some pages from the second issue, because I've got access to the Image Comics.
Oh, nice.
Show
now.
Off. Yeah.
But, drop.
I think at this point it would be a nice time to say that Richard can also be found on
newsarama.com. Yeah, I'm a few weeks ahead with Image Comics, but it's...
You can find me in the Google search engine.
Yeah. You can find me on Google. Why did I just do John Lovett?
I have no idea.
John Lovett. So look, that's it's still worth reading, I think, because Kick-Ass is always interesting. The movie's coming out, part two. There's going to be a lot of buzz around that. So look, you know, maybe this was just a cash-in to have a new series out in time.
Apparently, though, he's saying, and they always do, that it was a trilogy and this is the end of it. And so this is supposed to be the conclusion.
He's some notes at the end of the
first
issue.
That's what I was going to bring up, the notes, exactly.
He says that,
the best we've ever done.
Well, he not only says that, he says this is going to be the final one, not just because it's the third part of a trilogy. He said, for reasons that will become obvious, which I'm not going to spoil now. Mm. So I don't know if someone's going to die, maybe. So, or something will happen to effectively put the series on permanently on ice. So, could be the end for Dave. Could be the end for Hit Girl.
Or it could be maybe not the end, but maybe wheelchaired or hurt.
Yeah,
that would be Mike. Like
Bane
Mark
will break his back. That's my theory.
Yes, well, that's possible.
Mm.
All right, I'm going to say that I didn't do a lot of reading this week.
Other than
our reading assignment and having to read or flick through a lot of Nicholas Scott stuff, because we have an interview with Nicholas Scott coming up later in this week. We've just recorded it this morning. We actually do have a little bit of a bite from that, though, if you'd like to hear.
And it's very appropriate because it's our Superman week.
Absolutely. This is what she had to say about Superman.
He's the top of the food chain, really, in terms of, you know, cape superheroes.
Mm.
And because he doesn't have a mask, or, you know, sort of visual symbols to hide behind. Like, you know, with Batman, you've got the mask and you've got the cape and you've got sort of, you can have many visual interpretations of him and it will always look like Batman. Where with Superman, it's just his face. You know, he's still got a cape and he's still got a big etch shield and all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to drawing his face, there's kind of nothing to hide behind, and everybody has their own idea of what Superman should look like.
That's right. He just has his face. Nicholas Scott was fantastic and really giving in that interview, and that will be up in a few days after you hear this. So do look out for that. What I did do this week after last week's amazing Marvels and this week's Grant Morrison is I went back and I actually watched a bunch of animated fare. Now, we're going to talk about the All-Star Superman animated film during our pick of the week, which I also watched, but that inspired me to go on, and I actually went off and watched the Wonder Woman cartoon that Bruce Timm produced again, which I hadn't seen since it came out, and I also rewatched Batman Under the Red Hood, and I just had this lovely time in the DC animated world rewatching these films, and I just thought it just reminded me how good the Bruce Timm productions were.
It's a shame he's left.
And how much he's going to be missed.
Yeah. Did he actually officially leave? Now?
Yes.
He has, yeah. He's doing that one short film with Zack Snyder, with Snack.
With Snack, yeah.
And he's going to, it'll basically be like a one-shot history of like all the people who've ever played Superman and so forth. So that's it. But I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we see him turning up somewhere else.
I'm sure.
Because he's not left Warner. He's just left.
He's just left the Marvel. DC just left the DC universe. Yeah. I also watched. We talked briefly about it last week. I watched Superman Unbound as well.
How was
the cartoon? Yeah, which is post Tim, I think. Was this Tim's last?
I don't know if it was Tim. I think he was involved to some extent. I don't want to.
It's all the same
that.
People, though. So it's Andrea Romano doing the voice direction and so forth. It was actually pretty good. I quite enjoyed it.
Because it's based on that.
It's Jeff Johns, right?
Jeff Johns.
Superman Brainiac.
Yeah, it's like a four issue series or something.
No, I love that storyline. Yeah, with Gary Frank did the artwork as well.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun. So that was another one I watched as well. I was immersed in it.
I know, I watched both of those as well. So that was, definitely Superman week, isn't it?
It was definitely Superman week.
If only
week.
We could watch Man of Steel as well, but we have to wait.
That's what's funny about it. It's more like our Superman Returns week because we don't really have much Superman in our show.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm a Superman.
Didn't you hear the Spin Doctors at the start? We played that. Alrighty, kids. We've got that was what we've been reading and watching. For all the latest reviews, you can check out behindthepanels.net and hit on reviews at the top. You can also find us on comicbookroundup.com, where you can compare what critics say from all over the web, including what we say, and see how it rates against other people. Right, so...
And see just how wrong we can be.
Or how wrong everybody else is.
That's
more
right.
More accurate.
If we want their opinion, we'll give it to them, damn it.
Alrighty, folks. It's time for the news theme, which usually signals time for news. TV and comics writer Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa teams up with Italian artist Francesco Francavilla to bring zombies to Riverdale in Afterlife with Archie in October.
Oz Comic Con adds Hellboy himself to the Melbourne lineup in July.
Ooh, can't wait. Batman Black and White returns as a miniseries in September. The first issue kicks off with stories and art by
I believe that's Chip.
That would be Chip Kid. That's hard to say. I consider changing your name, Chip. Michael Cho, Neil Adams, Joe Quinones. I got that one right.
There you go.
Maris Wicks, John Arcardi, Sean Murphy, Howard Mackey, and Chris Somney.
It's only just hit cinemas in the US, but Man of Steel already has a sequel fast-tracked. Zack Snyder will return as director and David S. Goyer as a writer. Christopher Nolan will be taking a nap in the background.
I've got all the hard names here. DC Vertigo's Fables is set for a big screen adaptation from Royal Affair director Nicolaj Arcel and David Heyman and Jeffrey Clifford of Heyday Films, best known for Harry Potter.
Man, I made it off easy this week. Matt Fraction's new book from Image Comics is Sex Criminals. I'm sold. That's all I needed. About two bank robbers who have the ability to stop time when they have sex.
Now I'm sold.
It comes out in September.
DC Entertainment announced that they are releasing DC 2 and DC 2 Multiverse, two digitally only interactive series allowing readers to determine the story outcome. Now...
Oh, sorry, what?
This is bizarre. I'll just bring the story up here in front of us so we can have a look at it.
Are you kidding me? They're actually... wasn't one of the purposes of the New 52 to eliminate multiverses?
Well, we've got Earth 2, haven't we?
That came later.
It wasn't to eliminate multiverses I don't think there's a problem with multiverses per se. I think you can have a multiverse, but I think when you go to like 17 of them, or 52 of them as they did... before, and they're all crossing over, it's confusing for new readers. The problem is, once you start something like the New 52 and you're 2 years in, you're up to issue 21, it's no longer new
and
it's
no longer 52.
That should be their priority, just getting rid of that label.
Readers have like now go, well, do I jump on at issue 21?
You know, it doesn't make any sense. The fact they're still calling it the New 52 is really not quite accurate anymore.
Now, some of the people that got involved in this, it doesn't sound too bad, but this is, according to the press release, DC2 is a new initiative that layers dynamic artwork onto digital comic panels, adding a new level of dimension to storytelling. DC Multiverse technology allows readers to determine a specific story outcome by selecting individual characters, storylines, and plot developments while reading the comic, yada, yada, yada. Sounds like it's choose your own adventure. Hang on. Before you go on, the two titles that they're launching with do sound kind of interesting. Batman 66, which is based on the 66 yep. TV series, which we still can't get on DVD or Blu-ray, but we can get a comic based on it. And one of the artists on that is Mike Allred, so it's going to look good.
Now that you've just read that to me, I actually remember I heard something about this just the other day. Apparently, it is a little bit like Choose Your Own Adventure. However, the outcome is always the same. So it's not actually, you don't get to say, it's like the old Choose Adventure. It's like, if you choose this, go to page 52. Right. If you choose it. This is basically, it is a straight narrative. So each book will basically have a straight narrative.
No, it's where, not. It's based on Batman 66.
A bent narrative, but basically it starts at the same starting point, ends at the same ending point, but you can choose which character you follow. So you actually see the story from a different point of view. So basically it'll have, like, you can go through as the villain, or you can go through as Batman, you can go through as whatever. And it basically is just a motion comic. Let's face it.
Well, this is the other thing as well. It's Batman Arkham Origins is the other one, and that uses DC2 multiverse technology, which is apparently uses action sounds and the ability to integrate a soundtrack, etc., which is sound very similar to the thing that Marvel announced.
Where they had sound effects,
Which, and the whole point behind this, and this is probably something very similar, it's not just sound effects, it's meant to be like a responsive soundtrack.
Create atmosphere.
Well, it's like, you know, it goes at your pace. So if you're not, it's not like the soundtrack doesn't just play, you know, in the background, like, you know, the dramatic music will rise as you get to the dramatic panels and all that kind of thing. So it's not you know, and if you're going slower, it'll just keep playing the soundtrack. So it's kind of like an interactive storybook in a way. I think these are good. These are probably not so much.
These aren't aimed at us.
They're better for people not who either want to just play around with their new iPad, or for kids who are the people we really need to get into comics.
Well, and considering that they're aiming for the Batman 66 series, this is for kids. We're aiming at the cheesy storylines and all that. The Arkham one is the one that confuses me, because Arkham is actually quite a dark story. But I guess they are aiming at the people who are playing the games.
Yeah. I mean, that's... Well, you know, they've had a lot of success with the Injustice tie-in comic, so this is probably just taking it to the next level.
The next level.
So there's that. That's news for the week. got that done. I think it's time we should just move on to the pick of the week, then.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
First released between 2005 and 2008, Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely's 12-issue All-Star Superman series began life as a Superman revamp called Superman Now. Overwhelmed with solar radiation, Superman gains new powers, but those same powers are also killing him. Winner of 3 Eisner Awards, it asks the simple question, how would Superman spend his last days on Earth? Stripping the Man of Steel down to his most heroic of essentials, this is All-Star Superman.
It was 2 o'clock in the morning with Dan Raspler, who was my editor on Justice League at the time. When looked up and across the tracks, 2 in the morning, there's a guy wearing a Superman costume walking across the rail tracks in San Diego. And we thought, this is insane. This is like some shamanic visitation. You know, if we were a pair of Indians and that was a white buffalo, we'd know this meant something. So we kind of ran up to the guy and said, would you come and speak to us for a little while? And he sat on this bollard, and that's what did it for me. It was really simple, because he just sat in this really relaxed way with the cape kind of draping off him. I was looking at him and I thought, well, really, you know, we're so used to seeing Superman in poses like this, or muscular, or snarling. And I thought, if you were really someone who couldn't be hurt by anything at all, you would actually be the most laid-back guy on earth. And that was what did it. It was something so simple. You know, I said, well, there's the key to Superman. He's super relaxed, because nothing can harm him, really.
Yes, that was that final voice there was, of course, writer Grant Morrison.
I thought that was you again.
Yeah, I just put on a really thick accent. That was from a documentary, which is available on YouTube, actually, called Superman Now, and it was the documentary that you'd find on the DVD and Blu-ray for All-Star Superman, the adaptation, the film. And it was them talking about the process by which they got to All-Star Superman and that shamanic vision, as he calls it, which he also talks about on a great documentary just about his stuff called Talking with Gods, I think
he,
it is.
He talks about it all the time.
All the time, yeah.
I think Grant Morrison needs to actually take fewer drugs and he would probably have fewer of the visitations.
That's a misconception, though. He doesn't take that much drugs.
He used to, though. He talks about it in great detail on Fat Man on Batman when he was with Kevin Smith, and he was saying that he was... It was one of his releases, but of course he's actually now drug free.
Yeah. The question is, does he still see Superman walking across the tracks wherever he goes?
he details a lot of it in Super Gods, his book. But anyway, he did take a lot of drugs, and he probably might still.
I think he's having a lot of drug flashbacks.
Put it this way: he probably does even more crazy stuff than take drugs. Like summoning shamanic beings and talking to giant scorpions.
These are all
available people without the use of drugs. So, you know,
I found out recently he's actually, like Alan Moore, he's a magician as well. He's a bit of a mage living up there in the north. So he's, must be to be the best comic book writers in the world. You have to tap into the realms of magic.
And into the realms of crazy. A little bit of the realms of crazy.
It's a fine line between genius and insanity. This firsthand.
He's got this great line in his book where he's like, yes, this experience nearly killed me, but I'm happy for it because it gave me 60 plus years of material to use in my comics. Actually, you know the alien beings that he meets in one of these issues are apparently designed on the beings that he encountered in Kathmandu, but...
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'll look it up while you guys talk.
Cool. I mean, the thing is that this story, I sort of mentioned it in the intro in a deeper, booming voice. But the fact that this sort of started life as a reboot. And this was back in, I think, 98 or something when they were planning on doing one of the many cycles of reboots for Superman. Of course, there was the John Byrne reboot. There was kind of the whole death and rebirth of Superman in the mid-90s. And they were looking at doing it again. And Dave's just brought up the pictures here now of Lilo and Barrel, is it?
Yes.
I think they're the characters, and they're based on the
orb-like creatures in the...
Oh, the orb-like creatures in the thing. Yeah, I see what they mean. That's right, when they're talking to each other via the Superman's orb. But anyway, this started life as a reboot because it was going to be with this dream team of, like, Grant Morrison, Mark Millar, Mark Waid and Tom Payo were going to be working on bringing back Superman for the next generation. Of course, that didn't work out, and elements of that ended up making it into All-Star Superman and a few other Grant Morrison stories. It's funny because he kind of did end up getting the opportunity a few years later to properly reboot Superman with Action Comics.
Which had mixed results.
Mixed results. So, but his intention with this book, All-Star Superman, was very much to pare it down to, I guess... the essence of Superman. What is it that makes Superman a great character? Why are we interested in him? I'm just going to say before I hand it over to you guys is that I've said many times on the show before, I don't like Superman as a rule. Like I've had problems with Superman because I find him such a one-dimensional character in a lot of ways. Two-dimensional because it's a comic book. But he's just very... Because he's so powerful. Because he's so...
it's all about the face.
Because he's just got his face. because he's so powerful, you're either faced with one of two things. You either got he's fighting bigger and badder monsters every week, or Jimmy and Lois are in peril all the damn time. So, and I know that's one of the things with the movies. It's kind of like if Superman's not punching stuff, then what's he doing? So I've always had a problem with, because kind of like there's only so many Superman stories they can tell, and here we are 75 years this year into Superman stories. What's left to tell? Now, when this came out around the 70th anniversary, proved to me, there's still Superman stories left to tell.
There's still juice in this character.
Yeah, and it actually told me why the character was so important. And having read this so closely to watching Superman Unbound and reading a few other Superman things, I'm like, okay, I get it now. I get why this character is... the archetype superhero and will always be 25 years from now when he's celebrating his 100th anniversary.
I think in many ways you could say that Superman is the superhero. I mean, everything comes off of this character. I mean, when you think of the superhero, you think of the almighty, all-powerful, flying, super strength, costume. You know, he is the superhero.
I mean,
and everything else comes from this.
There's nothing he can't do. I mean, the dude shoots lasers from his eyes. I mean, it's like, well, you know, it makes no sense, but it's like you just accept it because he's Superman.
That's right. And it's like at the beginning of this book, when he manifests this new power, and they go, "You've manifested a new power." It's one line. It's thrown away. It's like, "Oh, you've got a new power." Boom.
Yeah.
Where he basically projects his aura around the ship to save it, you know? And you go, "Wow." You
know? Well, there's this thing about Superman, though, that I find him to be actually really complex. Because you have it's the irony of this alien who just wants to be a human being. And in that sense, we get someone who's more human than a lot of superheroes.
Yeah.
Because he sees what he can't be.
Yep.
But there's two different readings to Superman that are really interesting. Like, I think it was in John Byrne. I've been reading a lot of the John Byrne stuff from the start.
Yeah,
the Superman stuff. Marv Wolfman joins later on. Jerry Ordway drawing, all that stuff.
And it's about 86-ish.
Yeah, around 86. Yeah, the first reboot that you talked about.
Mullet Superman.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a bit later with the death of Superman. But, but there's this interesting thing about it where there's two interpretations that a writer can take when they approach Superman. The first one being that it's an alien that wants to be a human. And so his first mode is Superman. It's, you know, the costume. And the Clark Kent is a disguise.
Yeah. Mm.
The other way, which is the more human, natural way, which is the best way to approach Superman, is that he's raised as a human being. And the costume of Superman is the fake persona. So you can play with two of these, and that's what Morrison sort of does here.
Very much so. And I think that's one of the things that I'd sort of noted down to talk about. I'm glad you raised it. It was that idea that I think Morrison said in interviews that there are actually three identities that he has. There is Superman, the hero, the cape, the costume. There is the bumbling Clark Kent in the office who's falling over himself all the time. He's a complete goofball. And then there's that honest-to-goodness farm boy who's just got really good values and he grew up in the Midwest.
The Boy Scout.
And that is perhaps, according to Grant Morrison, he said he thinks that's the most real version of Superman.
Effectively, there's Superman, there's Clark Kent, and then there's Kal-El. And Kal-El is him.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
And when he goes to his fortress, he can be him. Mm. And in this, there's actually a wonderful line where he says, "I need to get away, and when I need to get away, this is where I come." And he gets to just be him, you know.
Oh, I can just see a whole lot of commercials now for like Club Med Superman. It's just like sometimes even I need to get away from Antarctica, and when I need to get away, this is where I come.
Did you guys ever read Irredeemable?
Oh yeah,
by Mark Waid. Yeah. Do you remember like how he can hear everybody's thoughts and everything they're thinking? So the only thing that he can do is just shoot off into space.
Space, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's that beautiful scene in Irredeemable where he comes back to Earth, and he's only been in space for like 30 seconds, but that was enough for all these disasters and natural things to occur, and so he can't even take a minute. And that's I think Mark Waid's Irredeemable is a more interesting reading of Superman than
I think Irredeemable, you know, is actually must read comics, especially in this month of Superman. Anybody who wants to see another take on this character, because it's not Superman, obviously it's not DC, they don't have the rights, but
he's drawn
an analogy to Superman and the Justice League and all the other characters and everything else, and created this world where basically he positions the idea of what if he went bad, what if he basically said, "Enough of this, I am a god and I'm going to wreak my wrath," you know, and it's a really interesting take,
which is a theme that comes up in this book as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, guys, to jump us off that.
I think it's really important because I think you can't talk about this book, All-Star Superman, without talking about all those other things of Superman that comes.
Everything leads into it. I mean, there's that wonderful line in, I think it's one of the Batman Superman books. I think it's Public Enemies, where basically, he, in Batman's speech bubbles, he's basically saying that he carries a kryptonite ring in his utility belt at all times, because he says Superman, Clark, Kal-El, whatever you want to call him, is a god and he doesn't know it. And one day he's going to realize he's a god and we're all in trouble.
You know?
And I think that's a really, this is the thing. He is more powerful than anything else on the planet.
There's a very, very religious sort of arc almost to this book as well, because he sort of starts off making, in fact he's already made the ultimate sacrifice at the start of this book. He's put himself in great jeopardy, and he says very casually at the start of the comic, "Yeah, I can see it under my skin and like little tiny fireworks going off."
Yeah.
I can see my body sort of slowly decaying. And, you know, Dr. Quintum, after he's basically flown into the sun to save, and it was all a setup from Lex, but he's thrown himself to heroic act, not even thinking, because that's what he does, you know, and he's basically killed himself as a result of this slowly. And over the course of the next 12 issues, he does 12 labors, which is a very, very... religious connotation to it. As a Catholic boy, I'm thinking the 12 stations of the cross.
Well, there's, I mean, there's Dante. The whole Superman story falls back to the story of Moses.
Exactly. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah, mm. yeah. The baby washed up in the river. Exactly. Yeah. And so, or, you know, Caesar and Planet of the Apes. I think there's always been a religious element to it, and Superman, like it or not, and I think this is what makes him such an American character, because he is the kind of ideal that every American would aspire to in a way. He is the American dream. He is someone who came from obscurity. He was an orphan. He was raised by good people in the Midwest, in a good, presumably Christian family, to get a good job in the city and just be there to help people.
Yeah.
And
he's categorically an American. He just has to be.
Yeah. He is the DC Boy Scout. I mean, he is the epitome of the
And yet Henry
American
Cavill,
boy.
A Brit, is playing him. DC came to keep hiring the British to play. Yeah, they're all American heroes.
well, and so is Marvel at the moment. So
yeah, that's true. Actually,
and Australians.
We've come a long way from when Brits and Australians were all villains in films. But the thing is, the 12 labors in this, Grant Morrison outlines, and I'll go through them very quickly. Superman saves the first man mission to the sun. Superman brews the super elixir. Superman answers the unanswerable question. Superman chains the chronovore. Superman saves the Earth from Bizarro Home. Superman returns from the underverse. Superman creates life. Liberates Kandor / cures cancer, defeats Solaris, conquers death, builds an artificial heart for the sun, and Superman leaves the recipe formula to make Superman 2. These are the 12 labors, and this is actually making Superman do things that he's never done before as well. This is Superman taking on the God mantle to the point that he ends up, again, spoilers and all people, he ends up in the heart of the sun. Mm-hmm. Basically being the machinery by which the sun... He is a sun god, but he becomes a sun god by the end of this, which is basically... This is the only way it could possibly end for Superman, really, is to ascend to a higher plane actually become the god that he...
Yeah,
in the most benign
gives
way.
Gives life to everybody on Earth.
Yeah, he literally saved... The thing that had given him his powers, the sun... Mm. He gives back to Earth by saving that thing.
Well, he has to give those powers back, effectively.
Exactly. You know? And Lois, at the end of it, is kind of confident that he'll return when he's worked out a way to.
And so is Dr. Quinter.
Yeah.
which is a very interesting. There's a line right at the very beginning of this book where Superman first discovers he's dying, and Dr. Q basically says to him, "Don't worry, Superman, we'll do everything in our power to save you, or copy you."
I love it. And that's what I love about Grant Morrison characters. They're just such... that they have these throwaway lines that are like, you know, hilarious. It's like, you know, that Grant Morrison's just quietly subverting it there in the corner. Yeah. I'd actually like to play a little bit, because Lex Luthor is actually a major character in this as well. Mm. He has always hated Superman. And this book kind of attempts to explain why, and what, you know, and Lex's thing that, you know, a world without a Superman would make him, allow him to be the genius and world savior that he is. I like to play a clip from the film, but it actually has almost line for line dialogue from the comic
as well. Before you play that clip, we should talk about the film very, very briefly and just say that the film is really interesting because they've distilled 12 issues down to a 77-minute film.
Mm.
And although it is almost line perfect, in the scenes that they actually show, they cut out enormous subplots. They just distill it down to its absolute core, which is the death of Superman.
Well, Bizarro's gone. In the movie, you just have... you don't know why Jimmy Olsen's doing what he's doing.
We'll come back to that after the clip.
he's not doing his, you know, something for a day. He's just a cross-dresser in the film. you know, and things like that. But Lex's relationship to Superman has always defined both of them.
Yes.
And this clip explains what happens when Lex finally understands Superman.
Are you okay?
Better than okay. I can see the entire electromagnetic spectrum, and those must be atoms. Little clouds of possibility. The fundamental forces are yoked by consciousness. Everything's connected. Every one. This is how he sees things all the time. Every day.
I don't know if I should be worried or mortified.
The gravity gun sped up his clock a little.
You think I didn't make more of them?
Looking for this?
Give it back! I saw everything! I saw how to save the world! I could have made everyone see! If it wasn't for you, I could have saved the world!
If it had mattered to you, Luthor, you could have saved the world years ago.
You're right.
I love the fact that Luthor says you're right at the end. That, to me, is just that moment of realization where it's like, no, I'm not really out to save the world at all.
Yeah.
You know? It is completely self-serving in every way.
He's deluded himself for his own megalomania. He wants to be the god that he sees.
That he's blamed Superman of being for all this time.
Yet if he actually had that, he always had the power because Lex Luthor's always been a genius. And he could have used his genius to...
Better mankind,
cure cancer, do all those things. But no, he did it trying to defeat Superman because he saw him as an impediment.
Mm.
No, I think that's a really good example of what this comic is all about. One of the things that movie doesn't have is Frank Quitely's art.
Mm.
Frank Quitely is quite possibly one of the...
Very best of the best.
Yeah, one of the very best of the best. He has a style which is completely inimitable. He draws Superman in the most heroic way. His chest is huge. He's got the biggest, roundest chin, but it's and you know, there's something very unique about Quietly eyes and lips. You know, you can always tell it. You know, he also worked with Grant Morrison on the new X-Men run, quite long X-Men run.
And he's
run.
Done this amazing miniseries called Flex Mentello. If you've never read that. Absolutely amazing. Yeah, probably Grant Morrison's best work.
And at the moment, he's working with Mark Millar on Jupiter's Legacy, which we mentioned before. So, look, the artwork in this is phenomenal. It's probably the... I'm going to argue that for both of them, it's some of their best work, if not...
This would probably be the peak of their careers, maybe.
I would say when we look back and you know, they're both of them have gone off to power the sun.
It's definitely, if someone ever walks up to me and goes, you know, can you recommend me a Grant Morrison or can you recommend me a Frank Quitely? There's no question which you'd recommend to be this.
Look, I mean...
Did you guys actually say if you liked this or not?
Yeah,
look, we haven't got to that yet.
We've gushed a little bit about it. I mean, I think it's fairly clear. I did just say I thought it was the best of both of their work, but that means nothing if I don't like them.
Dave's very quiet over there. He's like,
I'm about to say...
It was terrible.
we've all talked about the Ink series a lot, and we've always joked about it. And all I can say is about this one is
this is comics 101.
This is a great piece of work. This is it's actually probably my favorite Superman tale, because I think it once again, it's that whole beginning, middle, and end. It is an Elseworlds tale. There's no doubt about it. It doesn't fall within canon.
Yeah.
But you look at it and you just go, as a Superman tale, this is a complete piece of work. And you get, it's like these little snapshots of what Superman is capable of. You know, with the Bizarro world, with the Kryptonians, we've got all these moments throughout this, which are seemingly unrelated, but they are all related because it is his last days.
The two major tests for me with the book is one, the fact that when it was over, I felt a sense of loss that I wanted to spend some more time with these versions of the characters.
And I wanted to see the re-rise of Superman. I wanted to see when it was over. I wanted to go, come on, that can't be the end. So let's keep going.
We're waiting for All-Star Superman Strikes Again in 10 years' time.
I don't.
Brilliant.
But it's just Superman and Catgirl getting around. the other thing, of course, is my earlier statement that I'm not the world's biggest Superman fan, and yet this to me is one of the finest examples of comic bookery that you can find. I love little things about it. I love the fact that he finally reveals to Lois Lane that he is Clark Kent Superman, and she refuses to believe it, even when Clark Kent kills over dead on the floor. And you kind of get the impression that Jimmy's always thought that, because yeah. he's like, great disguise, Clark. We keep a spare costume for you here, just in case. It's kind of like, you know, like you kind of suspect that he's known. But I think the refusal to accept Superman is something that we've often spoken about. The idea that why can't people see that Clark Kent is Superman? I've actually seen sketches of this, and they might be either in the trade or in that beautiful Absolute edition you can get of this, where it's Frank Quitely's sketches of the curvature of the spine of Clark Kent.
And, yeah, he draws him hunched over.
Yeah, and it's like you can actually see it's the same character, it's the same chin, the same mass, but he draws him the most hunched over person you could find, as though he's slumping into himself.
Yeah, you can actually see it in particular the issues which were all about the leech in the prison. While he's walking beside Lex, he's always hunched over. Mm. You see the curve of his back. Mm. He always looks kind of lumbering, like he's kind of like Hodor from Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
you know?
like he's trying. Like he's trying to disappear into the scenery.
Yeah.
Or and he's bearing the weight of it all on his back.
Or is that as well? Yeah, no, he is the most, like Clark Kent, the persona, is the most downtrodden character you're going to find, which is why, I mean, when, Siegel and Schuster, when they created this, weren't conscious of that fact. They were just creating a superhero who was also an everyman. It was very much a Depression era kind of, or post-Depression era comic, which was about hope, which was about renewal. But you know, now reinterpreting it, reimagining it, and filtering it through our modern sensibilities, he's very much he's still very much the everyman. But you're right, he is bearing all this weight, but at the same time, he is the reason we don't. What we say now is the reason we don't see him as Superman is because we don't want to see him. We see Superman as the heroic figure, the sun behind him, chest, just as Grant Morrison described it, chest puffed out, posing, snarling, whatever. Clark Kent, and actually Lex Luthor says it in this, you're everything that he is not.
Exactly. You know? And for somebody like Lex, who is so intelligent, he can't see it. Mm. He literally can't see his arch enemy right in front of his face.
Because he would hate the idea that Clark Kent has outwitted him for all these years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I also love the thing that makes this book so special for me is I'm a very big fan of asides. I'm a very big fan of humor. And Grant Morrison goes out of his way for these little moments throughout this. Let's come back to Jimmy. We've talked about Jimmy very briefly there. If you've only ever seen the cartoon, he walks out in a dress. And people go, what the hell are you doing in that dress? And he basically never, it's never mentioned again.
If they say something in the cartoon like, are you undercover? And he goes, no.
No. And they go, why is Jimmy in a dress? In here, we at least get the explanation. But before we get that explanation, we see Jimmy in a dress at one point. Then we see him with a girl, and he's actually wearing a bra and panties. You know, and it's like, he's like, what is going on with Jimmy? And we finally find out that he's doing these editorial pieces where he's being something for a day. Yeah. So he's being a cheerleader or he's being, you know, whatever he's being, and all these little moments that you just, and what's his name, the sports writer who's the big hulking,
oh yeah yeah, and he's constantly, you know, lighting Clark
on fire
and stuff like that,
and it's like, and he's always hitting on Lois, and Lois is always, and you know, all these little moments throughout it where you get these little hints of humor. The other thing I want to mention about this book in particular, now I've always been a Marvel guy, you know that, but Superman for some reason was always fascinating. I was a huge fan of the 79 film and stuff like that. I've had probably a crush, what you could call a crush, on Lois Lane since I was a child. The way Lois has always been drawn, the way she holds herself, her strength, everything about, I've always had a crush on Lois, and the portrayal of Lois in this is gorgeous. I mean, she is not physically, I'm just talking about her portrayal. When she has the lightheaded moment where she starts to think Superman's trying to do her harm, and she's wandering around, she's saying I'm seeing the world in black and white for the first time, and we got the black and white frames where she's basically concocting this whole scenario in her head.
Paula Samson said she's got brains, brawn, the whole package.
And then when she gets given superpowers, and there's that lovely scene between her and Superman at the very end of that arc where she's basically, the powers are running out. She's sitting there, she's going, thank you for letting me see the world through your day. And she literally falls asleep in his arms, and he puts her into bed and gives her a kiss on the forehead, and just go, this is a really beautiful moment.
The Lois Clark love story is like the quintessential superhero love story. They are the couple of comics, you know. Yeah. The close, you know, you've got, you know, Reed Richards and Sue Storm, you've got
Cyclops and Jean Grey,
you know, like, all beautiful love stories. But this one, and and I got to admit, I'm a softie. I like a good romance story when it's done well. And the very final pages, when, and I'm getting choked up thinking about it, when and I'll just pull it out here, when he's about to fly off into the sun and save it, and he's glowing white, yes, hot light because he's about to turn into like a sun god sort of character. And he just says to you, you know, and she says, no one can repair the sun, Lois, but me. My cells are converting to pure energy, pure information. I only have moments to save the world. They kiss, and she says, that's more than you ever needed. I love you, Lois Lane, until the end of time. And that's just such a beautiful moment.
It is beautiful.
Because it's kind of like he's giving the ultimate sacrifice, but he wanted to stop and tell her, it's only ever been you, Lois. Mm. You know, there's no one else on this planet. I'm the most powerful man in the world. I'm the only one who can save the sun. And I chose you because of who you are.
Yeah.
You
know? And I also love the dynamic that it is the ultimate comic book. I don't want to say, that's not the word I want to use. I was about to say three-way. It's not three-way. Love triangle.
Yeah.
Because she's obviously also in love with Clark.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And she's got this really soft spot for Clark, but her love is Superman.
I love that scene at the start when
he's not my idiot.
He's not my idiot. It's such a great line.
My favorite line in the whole book.
Like, your idiot just ran into me. He's not my idiot. It's just such a, yeah, no, it's a brilliant moment. Look, this book is probably, as we said, it's Comics 101. This is what we actually recommended this a few weeks ago to someone asked me, you know, what Superman story should I start with? And I said this one, even though, you know,
and I kind of halted you saying, oh, but it's an Elseworlds and they might not be ready for it. But I've now in reading it again the second time.
It's the most
It's the most
pure Superman story you're gonna find. It's sort of almost the style because of all the bumbling and Jimmy stuff and Lois just sort of going.
I just see Clark's first entrance when he literally slides across the slides across the floor and lands in Barry's office.
But all that makes it like old school Superman.
Yeah.
Superman before it got dark in the 80s and 90s, before he had a mullet, before, you know, before he died and was reborn again, before they had to create a creature so powerful just to kill him. This is a story where the only thing that can kill him is his own heroics.
Yeah.
You know, and his own self-sacrificing nature. That's why this is the best story.
In many ways, it's really indicative of what is good about superheroes in general. You know, with a great writer, a great artist, you can have something really special with what other people would turn into.
Well, it's
bad.
True, and we've talked
like
about
what you said about Lois, for example. Lois can be the worst female character in any medium.
Absolutely.
And she can also be the best.
In fact, I will go so far as to say that Lois, as portrayed in the current run of Superman, I don't have such a crush on.
No.
Because I find her a little bit standoffish. I find her a little bit rude, basically. And she mistreats Clark.
And
you know?
I didn't like her in Superman Returns either, because she seemed too weak a character.
Oh, you the movie?
The movie,
oh,
yeah. Superman Returns, yeah.
And way too young, man.
And way too young.
Pulitzer
and
Prize.
I think I'm so glad that they've cast someone like Amy Adams.
I just, just in the trailers for it, I go, Amy Adams, I said, nailed it!
Yeah, just that one line,
yeah,
right?
Like, yeah. No, I mean, you needing someone strong. And, like, you know, Margot Kidder back in the day was a great Lois Lane as well. Even Terry Hatchett was good.
She was all right. But for me, it's always comic book Lois Lane. It's that raven-haired... It's that particular character.
You talk about not having strong female characters in comics. Lois Lane was always that. Unfortunately, there was a run of comics where it's like Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane. Yeah. And it's like, you know, she's in a kissing contest with all of the superheroes and stuff like that. It's like, well...
And do you know what I've really enjoyed? I really enjoyed the Lois Lane that was in Superman Unbound, the cartoon.
I love
the fact that her and Clark are sitting at a dinner table. She's going, I want more Clark.
Yeah.
I want a normal life, right. You know?
There's a lot of parallels between those two, actually. And it's interesting that they released them both as films. We're going to have to start wrapping this thing up, but I think quick round of recommendations. I think we can all safely say yay.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Must read, and read it before the film if you can.
Yeah, I'd say look, between this, Mark Waid's Superman Birthright would be another one I'd recommend.
Absolutely.
My favourite Superman story is not this, as much as I'd love it to be, but it's Superman for All Seasons
by Jeff Loeb.
Stunning.
Yeah. And the other one.
You'll cry.
And you also want to mention quickly the Alan Moore Superman.
Oh, yeah. I just brought this in, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow.
Which is a brilliant story.
Also a brilliant story. So if you're looking for a Dark Knight Returns-ish suitable ending for Superman, an all-star Superman doesn't fit that role for you.
Mm.
Pick up Alan Moore.
Yeah, Alan Moore has a really interesting take on Superman. Yeah. The other one I was going to say was, it's got out of my head now. Oh, I'll come back to that.
There's Secret Origin as well. It's a good one.
Secret Origin.
Oh, I was going to say, the other one that I really liked and is completely left of field is Mark Millar's Red Sun.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yes,
which gives you an opposite opinion. Yeah, it's an Elseworlds where basically instead of landing in Kansas, he lands in Russia.
As we've already said, he's so American. What would happen if his values were from a different...
Absolutely. Exactly. And it's a really interesting take. And once again, short and sharp. I think it's only 3 issues or something like that. Mark Millar was on fire when he wrote that.
And if you want some really out there Superman, go for Justice League of America by Grant Morrison.
It's
out there to say the least.
Yeah, that's definitely, a lot of this came out of his successes with that. He ended up doing a lot of Superman stuff. If you want to get this book, you can get it as 2 trade paperbacks that have been recently republished. It's just All-Star Superman 1 and 2. Also, you can pick up, if you can find it, the beautiful Absolute Edition, which is the big oversized one. I want to get that one just for Quietly's art on a giant page because I try and get the Absolute Editions whenever I can. So definitely pick it up if you can. Absolute recommended. Comics 101, people. Now, we don't have a lot of feedback this week, so we'll use the time with the girl from Ipanema to sell some stuff. Hi, people. We're doing a lot of convention work this year. We're going off to Supernova. We're probably going to Oz Comic Con as well, and I'm heading over to New York in October to go to New York Comic Con. All this costs money. So if you want to support the show, not to mention server costs for bringing you this free show every week, if you want to support us, head to behindthepanels.net, head off the Cafe Press link over on the right-hand side of the page, where you can buy t-shirts, you can buy hoodies like the one I'm wearing at the moment. You can't see it, but it's very warm. You can buy stickers.
Mugs.
You can buy mugs. And you can hear it. That's right. Coins. No, you can buy...
money!
Get it away. Look under your seats. It's money. We told you this was Oprah's show.
These are buttons. So we have behind the panels buttons, and now these are actually giveaways for Supernova.
So if you come up to us at Supernova or Oz Comic Con and say something like, jiggle my diggle.
I think it's actually show me my diggle. Jiggle my diggle. All right.
You'll get one of these. Basically, if you come up to us at any stage and say you're a fan of the show, you see the logo on the things, or if you're one of the people we end up interviewing, cosplay and whatnot. We had one of our readers told us who wrote to us last week said they'll be dressed as Green Arrow. We'll definitely be talking to you, so you'll get yourselves a shiny new button with David and my cartoon face
and
on
an amazing bumper sticker. These are really
these
beautiful.
These are really slick. They have the URL, which is behindthepanels.net. They're black. They're awesome. You can put them on the boot of your car. You can put them across your forehead.
On your laptop.
I'm going to put one. I'm going to cover myself in stickers. That's what you'll see me.
You'll look like the cover of the Office Space DVD.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm going to turn up in. So if you want to do the same thing, come up and just get order them all from Cafe Press. Cosplay as a giant sticker, and we'll come and talk to you.
And you cosplay as a giant sticker, we'll give you a sticker. What?
Okay, so while we're still at the girl from Ipanema, let's do a round of telling people where they can find us.
You can find me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh.
You can find me, of course, on Twitter at DVDBits. You can find me online at behindthepanels.net, therealbits.com, that's the RELBits.com, or now you can find me on newsarama.com as well. And Mr. Longo, where can they find you?
You can find me at www.damngoodcup.com and on Twitter at Dave Longo.
And there's the music.
Ah, we timed that one perfectly. That's it for a super show this week.
And I think there's only one way to end this show.
Yes, we'll definitely go out on that. But next week, we'll be doing Daredevil End of Days by Brian Michael something or other. Yeah. Bendis.
He hasn't written much, hey?
He's only written a few.
He's a new writer. Up-and-comer.
We talked about the end of Superman this week. We're talking about the end of Daredevil next week. So, killing off characters one at a time. This is Behind the Panels.
And there is, as we were saying before, there is no other way to end this show being a Superman show than we are going to go out with the amazing John Williams, because I think he kind of defined what Superman sounds like.
And ringtones forever. until next week, people, if you're in the States, go off and enjoy Man of Steel. Tell us what it's like. Hit us up on behindthepanels.net, feedback at behindthepanels.net, facebook.com/behindthepanels, or leave us a voicemail message. The details are on the site. Let us know what it's like if you're in the States. Otherwise, we'll see you all next week. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
And I'm Dave Longo.
And this is Dave Longo. And this is Behind the Panels.